This is a podcast from Minute Media.
You're listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast with contributors from MLSMultiplex.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the MLS Multiplex podcast. Drew here, as always, with Josh and Connor talking about a lot in the MLS world. I think our first double game week happened this past week. Maybe not. Yes.
There was a few weeks ago, one or two teams played a double game week.
Okay. I guess this was the first week of like the whole shebang playing. So we had a lot of MLS action, a lot of news getting announced, some exciting stuff, some possible shenanigans that we will talk about for sure. But it has been a while since we last recorded, so a lot has happened that I can't even keep up with stuff. Connor's pointing down, which I assume means I should go to Josh first because no one's below Connor. So I'm going to go to Josh. He's just pointing down to the outline on my screen. But
on my screen, Josh is below me. So
okay,
same for me, to be fair. So when he was pointing down, it looked like he was pointing at me. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, my setup is you guys are beside me on the top row, and then the last person to talk other than me is below me. So right now, Josh is below me.
Oh, you have it like rotating.
Yeah, yeah. I like to keep me on my toes here. But anyway, Josh. Golf stuff. Apparently there's a fun story that we're excited to hear about. How has the past life been treating you? I don't know how long it's been since we recorded, but how's it going in back home?
Yeah, I checked when our last podcast came out. It was May 2nd. So it's been almost 3 weeks for us here. It's been a longish 2 weeks, but it's fine. It's fine. We, you know, life happens, just gives us more to talk about on the podcast. But yeah, it's been really busy. It's been almost 3 weeks, but it feels like we just recorded a few days ago, at least to me. That's just how life is right now, kind of nonstop. But it's cool. It's cool. I did start the new golf job, and that's been nice. I golfed yesterday after working a shift, so that was cool. But yeah, the other day, Mohamed Sanu came in to the shop. He had a round, so that was really cool. And one of the other guys. We're next to, yes.
Who is Mohamed Sanu? Because for anybody who doesn't follow the NFL, we have no idea who that is.
All right. So as Connor is inferring, he's an NFL player. It's not entirely surprising because he used to play for the Atlanta Falcons for a few years. He was part of that really good team that went all the way to the Super Bowl. So he's
what happened in that Super Bowl? I'm forgetting.
That's enough.
I don't know.
That's enough out of you.
All I know is they made the Super Bowl. I don't know if they won or lost. I
phenomenal.
It's been erased from my memory. I know I watched the game, but so yeah, he's a former NFL receiver. I think he could still play now if he wanted, but I don't know if he's got a team or anything. But he stopped by. But that prompted a conversation between myself and I think it's the assistant GM at the golf course that's next door that's owned by the same company. But I was talking to the assistant GM and he was letting me know of some other athletes that have golfed at either of the two courses. Justin Fields and Kyle Pitts played together a couple of weeks ago over at the other course. He said Vince Carter had stopped by a couple times. Tyreek Hill golfed at one of the courses last year, which that one's a little weird for me because I don't know how he connects to the whole Atlanta thing. But the other ones, you know, make good sense. But he also mentioned that he himself, the assistant GM, has golfed with some Atlanta United players. Side note, that's one of the cool things about this job is I get a lot of comments about my tattoo, which in all of my jobs up to this point, like it hasn't really sparked a lot of conversation, but I guess with all these people coming to play golf, you know, they're pretty well-versed in sports. So it usually, you know, provides a good conversation starter for whoever I'm helping or whatever. But the assistant GM saw my tattoo and he mentioned how he played with a few Atlanta United players over the last couple of years. And he mentioned Julian Gressel, which, duh, Julian Gressel loves to golf. So that was not surprising. But then he starts to tell me about this other guy he golfed with, says he's tall, has long hair, tattoos, and I'm thinking, okay, you're describing most soccer players. And for some reason, my mind went to Jacob Peterson first, who he was part of the original inaugural team, but he's like, no, it's not Jacob Peterson. And I like keep, I'm pressing him a little more. And finally he goes, I think it was Shea, Breck Shea. And I was like, no way. So my next question is, because he's like, oh, Julian Gressel's cool dude, like cool guy, cool dude. And I'm like, yeah, duh. Like he seems like that. And I was like, is Breck Shea as like weird as he seems? And he was like, oh yeah, that guy's a character. He's pretty goofy. But he was like, he's a good guy. And I was like, oh yeah, for sure. And I was like, as I mentioned, I was like, that dude's had some awesome photo shoots over the years. So hopefully that guy, the assistant GM, will go out of his way to maybe find some of those photos. But yeah. So there's a little Breck Shea story for you for the pod for golf. As soon as he said that, I was just like, I was very amused by his answer.
Sorry, we're going to have to kick you off the podcast because the fact that your first guess wasn't Breck Shea is frankly insulting.
Look, in my defense, Breck Shea only played with the team for like 3 months before tearing his ACL. So I kind of forgot that he was on the team in the first place. So, and because he mentioned Julian Gressel, threw me off and I went to the inaugural roster. You just be impressed that I thought of Jacob Peterson of all players. Like you guys even know who that is. I mean, maybe I think Drew that's remembers even him.
No, not a chance. No,
you don't remember that's him? Even... He scored like 3 goals for the team the first year. He scored the 6th goal against Minnesota United in the second game of the season. And he scored that stoppage time equalizer against former club Sporting Kansas City on the road. That was in August of 2018. 2017. I think 2017 because I was student teaching then. But anyway, yeah, he's in my heart, he's a little cult legend. So that's why I went with Jacob Peterson over Breck Shea. So I apologize.
Just insulting to this podcast and the MLS multiplex writers.
Is Breck Shea good? Did you ask him? I don't know. If you had to guess.
That's a good question, honestly. I feel like Julian Gressel is probably pretty good because of how much he golfs.
For sure.
But the fact that they were all golfing together probably means that Breck Shea is a pretty frequent player. Now that I think about it, and if this ever comes up in conversation, and maybe the longer I work there, because I've only been there for a couple weeks now, and the more I get to know this GM, I can maybe, you know, like, hey, if you're golfing sometime, you know, these players, like, hit me up.
If you need a Shea, B pops up and let me know.
But please get me on that tee time.
That was going to be my next question is, how did he end up playing with them?
I don't know. So I didn't really have a chance to get into it because I think I had to get back to working or he had to run off to the other course or whatever. So we weren't able to have a further conversation about it, but I do plan on asking a little bit more if it ever comes up again. And it probably will. I'm sure I'll see some other athletes at some point, especially now that it's summer and it's going to be such a popular thing to do. So we'll see.
So is it just being the NFL player that you've seen or anybody else?
Yeah, just the NFL player so far. And I haven't noticed any other. When I saw his name, I was like, is that? I'm like, did someone just like fake put in his name like as a joke or, you know, whatever? But then the GM, he came over and I was like, is that actually Mohammed? And he's like, yeah, he golfed here last week. That's, you know, that's how I figured out that was actually him. So we'll see. We'll see if more names pop up and I'll be sure to tell you guys all about it when it does.
I guess that's perks of the job, huh?
Well, the perks of the job are the free golf. That's the perks here. I'm taking advantage. It's 3 games in the last 3 weeks. A couple stops at the range after a shift, and then I plan on playing at a couple of other courses that are in the area that the management company owns, so it should be fun. What about you, Connor? How's freedom now that you're not a student anymore?
Technically, I'm still a student.
But you're not.
I'm not.
You're graduated.
Boring. I haven't been doing crap. Sort of just sitting around the house doing nothing. So... yeah, that's about it. I think since we last recorded, my university announced its new name, which I don't know. Did either of you see that?
No. Well, no. Did you share anything about it?
No.
Then no.
No.
Well, if you had to guess, what do you think the new name of Ryerson University is?
We've talked about this before.
Canadian face.
That would have been very Vancouver. Fun. I wish.
Ryerson.
Maple Leaf University.
Austin Matthews University.
Again,
Vince Carter College of Education.
All of those are better than the name that they chose, which is
Toronto
Metropolitan University.
Wait, it's what Metropolitan?
Toronto Metropolitan University.
TMU.
I was to say, TMU has a decent ring to it.
Yeah, it has good short forms. It's so boring. According to our student newspaper.
Boring is safe.
Yeah, and that's what they were going for. But according to our student newspaper, I just want to pull this up so that I get it 100% accurate instead of say some name that isn't correct or some amount. Where is it? There. According to the Eye Opener, which is the student-run newspaper at Ryerson, the allotted money for the rebranding, $6.5 million. Yeah.
What?
New logo, too, or just a new name?
Yeah, new logo, new all that stuff.
Okay. But that much, though? Like...
I think the school super close to me, North Georgia, used to be North Georgia College, and then it went to UNG. It was something crazy like that too, because they had to go from the North Georgia Saints to the UNG Nighthawks.
I guess you got
all these logos, signage. Like the athletic facility had to go from the Saints to like a big Nighthawk in the middle of the field. It was crazy.
That's the thing is they announced a new name. They haven't decided, I don't think, on what we're going to be like our sports teams are going to be called.
Okay. All right.
It's so
still dumb. Feels like a massive waste of money to some extent. Well,
they had to change the name. I understand having to change the name. The guy was a messed up dude. But I understand having to change the mascot name because his name was Aggie and the guy's first name was Egerton. So, you know, yeah. But some of the is just absurd. It's not. Look, we don't have a good reputation. Let's put it that way. I don't know. We'll see. We're going to be the emus and it's going to be hilarious. But
that would actually be cool.
It would be pretty sick. Drew.
Are you good, Drew?
That's literally like when Darren Eels made that fake Trainee McTrain face. Like, that's the real version of that. Eggy Egertus.
It's bad, dude. It's so bad. But yeah, so I'm going to file for the second paper because my degree that I'm going to get in the middle of June is going to have Ryerson on it. And then you can file to have a new one issued with TMU on it. So I'm going to technically have two degrees, which is going to be funny. And I'm going to hold that over people because
I'm going to call you Connor 2 degrees Somerville.
There you go. That's what I've been doing. Drew, you're still working for a soccer team. Any drama?
No. Crazy busy, though. We have 6 games in 6 days because the USLW League started for us Sunday. So we had a doubleheader with the W League team and then the League One team on Sunday. Did that again on Wednesday, and we are doing it again tomorrow, but tomorrow they're on the road, which is good. The W League team plays Wake FC, and the men are in Madison, Wisconsin to play the famous forward Madison Flamingos. So that will be fun. Busy week with that. Had actually the save of the week, goal of the week, and the April player of the month were all Charlotte Independence players, which sounds really good. But it's a lot more work that we have to do. So love that. It's been busy, but it has been good. They go on a long road trip and their next home game will be June 26th, also against forward Madison.
They're
so
road for a month.
Yeah. Cause that's the way the schedule was, man. It was kind of weird. They got like about a month at home and now they're getting a month on the road. And then after that, it kind of turns into like a normal schedule, like 2 at home, 1 on the road, 2 on the road, 1 at home, like that. So
when are you going to travel with them?
Not going to Madison. Not too upset about that because I just want to stay at home and watch soccer and not go anywhere. But I think so. We play the Greenville Triumph a couple weeks. May go to that game because Greenville is like an hour and a half, 2 hours away. And then we play North Carolina FC, which is in Raleigh, also like 2 hours away. I am going to Richmond to watch the Independents play the Richmond Kickers because I'm going to DC to watch the Braves play the Nationals and just hang out in DC with my friends. So we can just go to Richmond. That'll be a cool D1 stadium. They have a cool atmosphere and brand in Richmond, so I'm super pumped about that. But most of the teams are pretty close, so traveling is possible. But then there's like a team in Fresno, California that like what? But.
Huh. Interesting. Do you guys have a long weekend this week? Or this weekend? No?
No.
For.
Okay.
Memorial Day is next weekend?
Sure. That sounds right.
Seems legit. Late May. Something like that.
Okay. We have. Technically, it's Victoria Day. But that's basically Queen Victoria, you know, because we're part of.
I don't know who that is.
The people you fought and
won.
Yeah, won. Yeah, we have a day. It's basically just we get a long weekend in May. Everyone just calls it May 2-4. So that's this weekend. But yeah, it's basically just an excuse for people to set off fireworks and terrify my dog. So that's fun.
In Georgia, you don't need an excuse. They just shoot off fireworks sometimes. Like there will be fireworks going off and I'm like, oh, what holiday is it? And I'm like, wait a minute, it's not a holiday. It's April. Easter fireworks.
There you go. The joys of fireworks. Let's talk about MLS because we've taken enough time off. We need to talk about it. Nobody gives a damn about our personal lives. So let's start with something else nobody gives a damn about, and that's St. Louis putting down grass. Congratulations, you placed down some turf. Next up. I think
it's cool.
Wait, hold on. Awesome. Take a time out here. It is May of 2022, and they're not playing. They're not entering the league until February of next year. Like, this is a big deal. When's the last time an expansion team came in with a brand new stadium already built?
I know Toronto FC did.
It's much more recent than that. I can think of one single team that had its stadium already built and ready to go. And even then, they had a little bit of a... I think they played at home in the second.
Was LAFC?
Yes. I'm pretty sure LAFC was ready to go. If not, then it was really early on in the season. But this is crazy. We're almost a year away from them joining the league and they've already got their stadium ready to go. And the exciting part about this is now their MLS Next team has the potential to play in the stadium. I don't know. I assume they'll play at least one game to kind of christen the new thing, but that's so exciting. I'm blown away by St. Louis City so far and they haven't even kicked the ball yet. They're so ahead of everything that I would be shocked if they're any kind of bad next year.
It is impressive. I'd hope the rest of the stadium is built and they didn't just put down grass and say, ha, we've put down grass a year ahead.
That's not usually how that works.
No, but it would be very funny if they did do that. I think that would be amazing. But, you know, whatever. Other news just breaking. Weston McKennie returns to U.S. Men's National Team roster.
Oh, the roster that just came out 3 minutes ago. Holy crap.
We want to dive into that the second?
No, not the second. Let's maybe we'll do that after we get through this MLS news.
Sure. Let's get through the MLS news before we do our games and stuff, because we're not doing like our typical games and stuff because we took so much time off. We can throw that in. Let's start with we've already started with St. Louis. Next up, Montreal are announcing their new logo because they listened to their fans and realized that their rebrand sucked. So that'll be announced on May 27th. So I'm excited to see what that'll be. I wonder if they'll go back to the old name. I doubt it, but it would be cool if they did. Maybe like an old similar logo sort of thing.
I maintain that the best way to do new logos is to just refresh your old one.
I agree.
And I've said it before on the podcast, but Arsenal is a really good example of this. They have like a couple of older logos, but it's always got the cannon in there. So it would have been nice. It's the fleur-de-lis. Is that what was in the middle of the? Yes. Yes.
So
it would have been cool if they had maybe a more modern looking fleur-de-lis instead of just ditching it entirely. Maybe there was a way to incorporate both the snowflake from the Olympics and the fleur-de-lis, you know? So it's just like, why these teams want to go like hard right or hard left. Chicago is the perfect example. They went super left field with their new logo. Everybody hated it. And then they came back more to the center and it's more of a refreshed version of the one that everybody already liked. So hopefully it's something like that for Montreal.
Yeah. It's good. They're at least listening to their fans. So we'll see what it looks like, but yeah, that's next week. We'll probably discuss it on next week's podcast. If not next week, the week after that. But yeah, that's exciting. Other exciting announcements, World Cup host cities are going to be announced on June 16th, which is the day before my graduation. So that'll be a fun day before. But I'd imagine Toronto will get one. Is Atlanta in the running? Because I'd imagine they would get one.
The question is not if Atlanta gets it, it's how deep into the tournament are they going to get games? Because it was being considered as a semifinal venue.
Ooh, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they break it up because I think the initial plan was to do all of the elimination games like in the US.
Is Vancouver in the running? I've seen like 10 different things about that city.
That's a very complicated question. I've seen some people say, I think they're back in the running. I think. The issue is they'll need grass at BC Place because right now it's turf. And are they willing to do that? How much will the entire situation play into whether or not FIFA wants to give them host city? I think Toronto. I can't see Toronto not getting it. I think Edmonton too. I think what they did with the qualifier games was really impressive. I think FIFA will be impressed by that. BC, I'd hope, but there's no guarantees. So we'll see. It's going to be exciting either way, though, when we finally get to see where games are going to be held. But how many cities in the US are up for it?
A lot.
Yeah.
I want to say it's like maybe close to 20.
20?
And I guess this is when it gets narrowed down to however many they're going to go with. So it's going to be interesting.
Would they announce, so like you said, Atlanta possibly a semifinal match. Would they announce that yet? Or is it more so like, hey, Atlanta is officially getting a city? I mean, a game.
To me, it seems like this is going to be like the thing. Like,
okay,
they might not do dates, but like, yo, this is the cities that are hosting. And then these are the rounds that they're hosting. And I'm pretty sure how it normally works, right? Like if you have a semifinal or whatever, you also get a group stage game.
I'd be shocked.
If you have a knockout round, you also get a group stage.
I'd be shocked if you didn't get a group stage game and only got a knockout stage game, but it's FIFA. So who knows? Bribery could play a part in that.
Who do we think, what city gets the final? What do we think? I say New York, well, technically New Jersey, between the Giants and the Jets stadium is, I think, either that or Pasadena, LA, pretty much.
You think they go back to Pasadena again?
That stadium's sweet. I love the Rose Bowl.
The real disappointing part is that SoFi is so brand new, and yet it's not wide enough for a soccer game.
Pasadena is just like the most perfect sports venue in the world to me. It's the Masters of football.
They got the final last time the U.S. hosted, right? Back in the 90s?
They got the final. I mean, I know in the 99 when the women played here because there's the iconic winning in penalties. I don't remember about 94.
I'm pretty sure Pasadena also had it for the men's World Cup, but I don't know. I feel like they might try to go somewhere different with it, but that's obviously a good pick. That or the Meadowlands.
Chicago.
No.
I think Chicago had a semifinal game.
I don't think
they get a semifinal game.
It needs to be
really
a travel hub, right? Because it needs to be easy to get to. So I think it's got to be one of the big cities.
Chicago is not the having just flown into O'Hare and driven up to downtown, like that's like 45 minutes away. Whereas with Atlanta, you're like 10 minutes away. SoFi is like literally next to the airport, even though I know they won't be doing the final there, which means Pasadena can't be that far away. Plus, I mean, that's LA, so that doesn't, of course, it's gonna happen.
Miami. It's gonna be Miami.
No, they don't. Hard Rock sucks.
Hard Rock?
Oh, not Hard Rock. The new Inter Miami Stadium.
How big is that gonna be?
Yeah, I don't
think they can make it pretty big.
They wouldn't make it. Nah, I don't think they're gonna build a big enough stadium in order to host that kind of game. Also, that's only 4 years away. You think they're gonna have that stadium built in time when they just now got it approved?
That's a good point.
And if it's big enough to host a World Cup semifinal, it's gonna take a long time to build.
That's true.
I could see Hard Rock getting, I don't know. That stadium's old, man. It's gross.
I'm also maybe being dumb because why would it take 4 years to build a stadium? Guess it depends on how soon they start building it.
Yeah. And how big it is. If it's a Tottenham-sized stadium, it's going to take a while. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see if they actually give us where it is. I think we're all in agreement it's going to be in the U.S. I can't see it being anywhere else, unfortunately, but... You know, hopefully we get to attend a game. That would be very exciting. But final little piece of news, and we're not going to spend a ton of time on this, because speaking of Miami, there are more Miami rumors. This one being Lionel Messi might be getting a 35% stake in the club to eventually play for the team. I just want a one-word answer. Maybe you could do like a sentence. Is this BS?
This current piece of news is crap, but it could very well come true in the next year or maybe even sooner. So it's a high possibility that eventually it turns legit, but for right now it's not.
True.
Yeah, I'm calling shenanigans. I have more thoughts if this actually happens, but I don't think this is good marketing move, bad soccer move is my take. I think it will happen eventually, but maybe not now.
Interesting. All right. Well, that happened. Figured that's a big story we should include and potentially clickbait too, depending on how I want to title this episode. but yeah, that'll be a later issue for me. Let's dive into the U.S. roster. A few changes to the roster. A few key, like pretty big additions. Joe Scally finally getting into the team. That's pretty exciting. DeAndre Yedlin back in for his first time since joining Miami. Although I think it's the first opportunity he's had. Who else came in? Haji Wright joined the team. Interestingly, Matt Turner is on the roster. New U.S. Women's National Team player Gabriel Salina is not, although probably for good reason, because he's not been good recently. Other than that, am I missing anybody? Any new Georgie Mihailovic?
And yeah, he's back. Yeah, Malik Tillman is probably the big one there.
That's a pretty big get, getting Tillman, because that was announced this week, I think.
Yesterday.
There you go. What are your guys' sort of initial thoughts on the roster? Like it, hate it? Who would you have rather made it in place of other people? Feelings? How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's always kind of hard for me to take my initial feelings off looking at the roster, just because there's such a big pool and certain windows mean certain things for certain players. So nothing really is, I mean, the guys that this is their first opportunity to get a cap, that's sticking out, right? Joe Scally, Malik Tillman, Haji Wright. But I think the thing that makes me the happiest / most disappointed is Aaron Long being back. He's kind of had his injury problems in the past. We know how good he can be. I feel like there was potentially a room to Europe, a move to Europe there at one point in the Red Bull system, but then injuries kind of pushed that back and now he's back. But I think when you mentioned that, you mentioned, is he going to play alongside Walker Zimmerman now that Miles Robinson is not playing, not a chance playing in this window? I saw something, someone did a study that there's like a very small chance he would be ready for the World Cup. It's take that what you will. Yeah, someone was like, someone made a return in that time frame. It was like, well, one football player did it. Like, does that mean Miles Robinson's going to?
I don't
think. And if he does, is he going to be ready to play in the World Cup? So there's probably like a 0.2% chance he's playing. But excited for Aaron Long. I mean, he's good. Like, I just want to keep our center backs to MLS players. I think Walker Zimmerman, he's the guy. He's that dude. And he's going to play beside him. So a lot of questions right now. John Brooks didn't make it. He's kind of just forgotten about. I think he's gone to Wolfsburg. I saw like a big ceremony, like, thank you, John Brooks, for everything you've done. So is Aaron Long that guy? We know how good he can be, but will he do it again? In this camp, he has a good opportunity. So that's really the main thing that sticks out to me. He's been playing consistently back in MLS for Red Bull, and I mean, Red Bull's been tearing it up. So happy to see him back in it, and he has a shot to kind of fill that Miles Robinson hole that the U.S. has right now.
Yeah, other guy, other center back who made it, Cameron Carter-Vickers. I think that's is his first time making the team in quite a while. He's been tearing it up for Celtic in Scotland. So maybe he's an option. You've got Omar Richards. No, that's the English guy.
Chris Richards.
That's a, yeah.
Combine Omar Gonzalez and Chris Richards together?
No, Omar Richards is the guy who plays for Bayern. He's an English left back. Only reason I knew that. But yeah, Chris Richards, that's always an option. He's still recovering from injury, I think, which is why
yes, he is
eligible or in the squad. So maybe it's a Chris Richards, Walker Zimmerman pairing. Maybe we see Aaron Long push his way back into the team. I think you're being very optimistic that Miles Robinson would even be close to ready at that point.
Yeah. Again, it was like some dude was like, hey, a football player did it, man, one time. Like, maybe there's a chance.
Yeah. Very, very unlikely.
Yeah. Yeah.
My feelings on that. But weirder things have happened. So who knows? Josh, what about you? What are your sort of thoughts on the roster? Anybody you're happier back? Anybody you're disappointed didn't make the team?
I like the roster a lot, especially for what this window is going to be, the two friendlies and the two Nations League matches. I think Berhalter did a decent job of keeping together like the main core of the squad, which, right, the main goal over the next 5 to 6 months is to just maintain good chemistry within the team to set them up for as much success as possible in November when they get to Qatar. The biggest things for me, really don't want to see Zach Steffen as the number one. I know Matt Turner has only just gotten back from injury, but I feel like their performances with the national team should be taken into account the most. Therefore, Turner should be the starter. So I hope Berhalter starts to swing that way. As for defenders, it's nice to get Joe Scally in there because now USMNT Twitter can shut the hell up about it, because I'm more sick of hearing them begging for Joe Scally to be involved than actually having Joe Scally involved. So that'll be nice. Maybe they can be quiet about that now. For defenders, like you guys were saying, biggest thing for me is just finding out who's going to be the right partner for Walker Zimmerman, because that dude is penned in starter. And honestly, it was him and Miles Robinson as the top pairing. So I just want to find out who plays the best with Walker. Not even if it's necessarily the best center back available, just what will give the team the best results. I'm a little surprised that George Bello was called up, because he didn't play all that well for Arminia Bielefeld after getting that move in the winter window. And so I'm a little surprised by that. Maybe we'll see Joe Scally played at left back, but he is right-footed, and I'm sure Berhalter would prefer left-footed left back. So I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't see somebody else show up there for left back. As for the midfield, I like it. I'm excited to see Georgi Mihailovic now that he's kind of leveled up as a player. I'm interested to see how he'll fit with the team. Matt Doyle brought up a good point in that Mihailovic is really a Ramdoiter. He's like a Thomas Muller kind of player that just kind of finds the game and doesn't really have a defined position. But Berhalter has a pretty strict system as far as what each role is for a player. And Mihailovic doesn't necessarily fit the kind of dual eight midfielder that Berhalter likes to have. He's maybe more suited as like a creating winger, playmaker off the wing. But he's listed as a midfielder here, which I feel like is probably on purpose. Because if he was going to play wing, he'd be listed as a forward. So that's a little interesting for me. As the only other thing for midfield is I wish Paxton Pomykal had gotten called up because he's finally looking like his old self after about a year and a half of injury. So maybe he'll get called up later if he continues to play well for Dallas. So I wish he'd be on the roster. And then for forwards, can we just find a striker? I just want a number nine. Jesus Ferrer has been lighting it up in Dallas. He's on a tear right now, and he was playing really well for the national team the last time he was with them. So maybe that form continues and we kind of get a sort of locked in player for that position. I'm sure Haji Wright will get some playing time. He had a great season over in Turkey this year, and this is a well-deserved call up for sure. So yeah, I just want to find a number nine, please soccer gods.
Yeah, that was make you very, very, very good, which I'm not a fan of, but you know.
hey, we're not direct competitors anymore. All right. We can kind of start to cheer for each other until we meet again.
That's very true. But yeah, I was going to say Tim Weah, surprised he hasn't really gotten a look at striker.
Because he's not a striker.
No, but I figured you could try it.
He has played striker in the past, but he's just so good on the wing. What one player I forgot to mention, Brandon Vasquez. I was hoping that he would also get called in. He has kind of cooled off the last couple of weeks, so maybe that's why Berhalter decided to just give Wright the one kind of obscure call-up. But
I wonder how Malik Tillman's going to factor in, too. How much of a role he'll have, or if he'll be more of a sort of bench option. But yeah, it's a very, very good.
Weston McKennie, too. He only just got back to training with Juventus like in the last couple of weeks. So I can't imagine he'll be very fit. He may even probably more there for like the chemistry and locker room vibe as opposed to like being a real contributor this window.
I think that's the only reason he's there is be almost like continuous sort of leadership growth because he has had issues with that in the past. So getting him reps and as a real leader and with the sort of central midfielders that they've brought in for this window, there's a lot of young guys too. So I wonder if that'll maybe have an impact on stuff. But yeah, I think it's more just to get him reps and keep him familiar with the team and all that stuff, make sure he's still on track and also probably to see whether or not he's recovering well, because this will be the first time they've seen him since he started training again. So yeah, maybe he factors in, maybe he doesn't. Interesting either way, but yeah, let's go to MLS and all of the things that has in store. Where do we want to start? Let's finish with Seattle, because I think we should finish with Seattle. Let's start with Austin. How many of us saw at the beginning of the season Austin being currently in the supporter shield position in the middle of May? Because I can tell you I didn't. Can they keep it up? Too is sort of the big question.
I am a firm believer that Austin is legit. I think obviously this 2-1 win in LA against LAFC was a, what's the word I'm looking for? It was a big win. There's a word that's out there that I can't find, but it's a win that I think people can look back to. And I mean, that might be the toughest result in the league right now is going to LA and trying to get anything out of it. So I think they would have been fine with just getting a point out of that. And then you say, oh no, you're going to win that game, I think is crazy. They're up 2-0. I went to bed and I woke up and saw that they won 2-1. So I think Austin is legit. They've scored 25 goals this season, the most in the league. I went back and looked at last year's stats. They have 25 goals through 12 games, more than double what they had this point last year. So they're scoring goals, and they're not, I mean, even the games they lose, they're losing like 2-1. So they're staying in games. They're not getting blown out. And most of the time when they're staying close in games, they're on the winning side of those. So that shows me that this team, like, especially in these one-off playoff games, if you can just keep it close, the odds are pretty good, especially if you stay in the top half of the Western Conference and you get those games at home, that you might be able to do something with that. So, I mean, if you're allowing one goal a game, you can get a lucky bounce off a shot, a deflection, and you tie it up. And then all the momentum's going your way. You're at home, so anything can happen. So they're keeping these games close and the offense is clicking. I don't think they can keep it up just because they just can't, right? Like, at some point it has to be like LAFC, like that, just, it has to be. But we've said that before, and Austin FC just keep proving us wrong. So I don't think they're going to win the Shield. I think they're for real. I think I said it before, but I think I and everyone else just forgot that MLS teams are much better in their second season. And Austin said, yes, we are going to be much better. And now here they are. So I don't even know if I had them in the playoffs, much less at any point in the season winning the Shield. So they're crazy. They're nuts. Yeah, looking good. I don't know what their next match is. I think they're at home because they had a really tough road stretch. They had to go to RSL and then to LAFC. And to get 3 points out of that trip, because I think they lost RSL on the road, which playing in Rio Tinto is poison. It's horrible. So they had a really rough road stretch and they got 3 points out of it. So good stuff in Austin.
They're not good.
They're going to go to LAFC and win. And you're going to say they're not good.
You're crazy.
Their second impressive result all season. Apart from that, the teams they've played, San Jose. That was when that whole coaching shenanigans stuff was going on. They've lost to Portland. They played Cincinnati when Cincinnati were really bad. Toronto. Sporting KC, maybe. Portland.
You mean maybe? That's probably the worst team you've listed off so far.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at last year. I scrolled too high on this, on the Google matches. Seattle, when they're going through CCL. Minnesota, they only beat 1-0. Houston, they beat. Houston, I don't think they're very good. Lost to RSL. They beat LAFC. They lost to LA Galaxy. They haven't had that many impressive results. They haven't had many very good opponents, honestly. I think they're going to have a real reality check the second half of the season.
But also, like, I'm looking, I mean, Nashville's going to be hard. Like, I just, all these results, like, if you can go to LA and win, you can win any of these matches.
Yeah, look, I will give them that. That was an incredibly impressive result. To go to LAFC and get a win, hugely impressive. I don't think they're that good. Maybe, I think they're taking advantage of a Western Conference that frankly isn't very good. When you look at it, like, I think Seattle are legit. I think they're going to be MLS Cup contenders, almost guaranteed. Colorado, I think they're going to get better when Zarda sort of starts to pick up form. I don't think Houston are that good. I think Vancouver have just been screwed this season with just so many different things. The big test for me, for them, is going to come July 24th. If they can get a result against New York Red Bulls, I think they're legit. But right now, I'm not sold on Austin yet. I think they're good. I think they'll make the playoffs. I think they're overperforming. What about you, Josh?
I am surprised that you're looking that far ahead for difficult matches when we could really just look at their next, I'm going to say their next seven games, which goes all the way to the beginning of July. They've got to play Orlando this weekend, and Orlando is a pretty formidable opponent. They're one of those top five Eastern Conference teams who are all separated by like a handful of points. It's all very, very tight at the top right now for the East. So they've got to host Orlando. They've got to go on the road to the LA Galaxy, who they just lost to at home a couple weeks ago, 1-0 loss. They got to go on the road to Montreal. They got to play Dallas, who is playing really well this season. They have to go on the road to Charlotte, which is probably 3 points for Austin. But Charlotte, they're no scrubs either, especially for an expansion team. They're pretty well organized. They could very well win since that's in Charlotte. And then they've got to go on the road to Colorado, on the road to Atlanta. Those are not going to be easy games either. So plus that Colorado game is midweek for July 4th. And now that I'm looking, the Dallas game is a week prior to that. So the schedule is going to get really packed when they come back from the June international break that we're going to get in about 2 weeks. So I do think we're about to find out how legit Austin is. I think all three of us can agree. I think anyone who's watched them this year can agree they're going to make the playoffs. It'd be pretty surprising if they didn't. I think it'd take like a lot of injuries and like a lot of bad luck for them to not get into the playoffs. But can they be Supporters Shield contenders? Probably not. It's not outside the realm of possibility. I mean, LAFC won the Supporters Shield in their second year, but Carlos Vela also went supernova that season. Driussi is good, and I think he's a really good driving factor for Austin, and I think he can be that guy should they make the playoffs to kind of help them get a good run going. And I think he can be that game changer, that difference maker for the team throughout the season. But is he Carlos Vela? No, no. There's only two players who have had like season altering MVP campaigns. And I would say it was Vela and Joseph Martinez. That's it. And Vela's was all the more impressive than Joseph's from the year prior. So I think these next 7 weeks are going to be really telling, these next seven games, I should say. Just as to how good Austin actually are. Now, to kind of go back to your point, Connor, about them playing a weaker Western Conference. Yeah, that's true. And I think you bring up really good points. I could even argue that this win against LAFC was a little bit fluky because there was a somewhat controversial non-penalty call, in which case LAFC could have probably drawn and finished the game 2-2. We don't really need to get too much into that. But that draw against Seattle is not that impressive considering what Seattle was going through. They lost to Austin. They did come back to beat DC on the road, but that's DC. They're not the greatest. They drew San Jose back when it was still nuts over there. So, yeah, I do think they've kind of taken advantage of a softer schedule. However, they can only play the teams in front of them, and they've done a good job of handling that so far. And I think that's definitely worth something. So, definitely solid team. Supporters Shield, we're about to find out. We're about to find out if they're capable of sustaining something like that. And everybody knows how difficult the summer gets in MLS. It's just so much harder for everybody.
Yeah, let's go from one surprise now to another. Cincinnati are in a playoff spot. Off the back of absurd performances from Brandon Vasquez and Lucho Acosta playing really well, they're somehow in the playoffs. They've won four straight. Can we not call them wooden spoon contenders anymore? Or have they gotten very lucky against some opponents? Because two of those wins were against Toronto FC. Are they legit? Like, can we call them legit?
I think it's safe to say they're not going to win the wooden spoon. I think we've reached the point. As for how legit they are, I think they're like a level below Austin, and that Austin is like pretty much guaranteed playoffs again, barring any like crazy circumstances. And Austin can kind of push up into competing for silverware this year. Cincinnati, I think, can push into making the playoffs. The reason why I'm not 100% sold is just when you look at those results, they're like all by one goal. So on one side, they're not the most convincing wins, but on the other side, they're wins. and Cincinnati will take wins. I mean, anybody will take wins any day of the week, but especially Cincinnati. I mean, three wooden spoons in a row. This is a league of parity. This is a league where you can change things in 6 months, and Cincinnati couldn't for 3 years. So the fact that they're finally winning is great. And I think Pat Noonan has done a good job of getting what he can out of those players. Like, it's definitely feels like the team as a whole is kind of leveled up, and without a lot of roster changes this offseason, there were not a lot of moves with this team. Probably their biggest signing was Alec Cann, and he's on the bench now because their super draft pick, Roman Celentano, is killing it. So that does not mean Alec Cann is bad, by the way. It just means he got injured at the wrong time, and the guy that's behind him turned out to be really good. So before you say anything, Connor, you just chill out over there. Cincinnati will take these wins. I think it shows real progress that they're able to get these kinds of wins. I mean, for being honest, that they're getting wins at all is great for them. So it's kind of the same thing as I was saying for Austin. We're going to find out over the next few weeks just how good they are. They play New England twice. They got to go on the road to Montreal. They got to go on the road to Philadelphia. And then they have to play Orlando and New York at home. Those are the next six games. That might be like as difficult as it gets for a schedule. You got three games against the reigning two Supporters Shield winners, against the reigning MLS Cup winner, against the team that's leading the East right now, and then against the team that's in the top five of the East. So that's a pretty tough schedule. If they could get, 18 points? I'd say if they just got 9 points out of that, if they could even take half the points, like, that's pretty, pretty impressive for Cincinnati. They get anything more than that, I'll be really impressed.
Drew, are you sold on Cincinnati yet?
I think I'm pretty much in agreement with Josh. I think the wooden spoon is out of question. Thanks to DC United for that. And I think they are a bubble playoff team, which is good because that shows progress. Like Josh said, this schedule is absolutely brutal. I think even right after you host the Revs, they go to the Reds and they host New York Red Bulls. So it doesn't get any easier. Nashville's coming up. So pretty rough. They have to go to Seattle on a Tuesday. That might be punishment for being so bad at soccer the past 3 years. So I think they're better. If they make the playoffs, I think the league's going to burn down because that's just weird. But I think when we talked about Austin and those results not being impressive, really the most impressive result I can point to on Cincinnati's schedule, which you might be able to understand what the heck's going on in Toronto more than anyone, went on the road and got a win against Minnesota after beating Toronto. So you played Toronto on a Wednesday, went on the road to Minnesota and got a win, and then got absolutely demolished in the Open Cup by the Revs 5-1, and then played Chicago 1-2-1, but we'll talk about Chicago and that team's falling apart soon. On the road to Minnesota is pretty good, especially that short rest, and you're going on the road to a tough place. So, I mean, that's like the only impressive result I think that they have, and it's going to get harder. So I'm convinced Austin's going to make the playoffs. I don't think I'm convinced Cincinnati's going to make the playoffs, but no win spoon. I could see him finishing like 8-10. I feel pretty confident saying they'll finish 8-10 range. If they finish above 10th, then that's cause for celebration, because single digits right there in the playoffs, that's pretty good progress considering what they have been. But I don't think they're a playoff team yet, but this is definitely much, much better from Cincinnati.
All right. And let's go from surprise to disappointment. Chicago, last in the East. Shaqiri hasn't fully lived up, I guess, I think, to the hype yet. They haven't won a game in 2 months, including a loss to Union Omaha, which, yikes.
Say the rest of the parentheses.
This is the same Union Omaha that lost 2-1 to the Charlotte Independents.
Yeah. Charlotte Independents greater than Chicago Fire.
what's gone wrong with Chicago? Because they made some huge signings. They brought in Kasper Schmelko. They added, I just said his name, Jordan Shaqiri. Gabriel Salinina is a year older. Why aren't they good?
What is fun about the Chicago Fire? I was doing very light result panning, and they allowed 2 goals across their first 7 games because we're talking about Salinina wanted to break the clean sheet record. I was like, oh my God, he might actually do it. So 2 goals across the first 7 games. Since then, they've allowed 2 goals in every game since. And then they drew the Red Bulls in Harrison, but 3-3. The good news is they're actually scoring goals. The problem is they're scoring 1 goal and they're allowing 3 or 2. So at least they're scoring now. That's positive. Bad news is they get NYCFC, so it's only going to get harder for them. I haven't watched enough Chicago to, because I mean, they were just so boring to watch at the beginning. We talked about like they're getting points, but they're just not fun to watch. So I can't really point to like, it's this guy's fault. Is it Slanina or whatever? I find it hard to totally blame the goalie for a 3-goal letdown. Connor,
one of the goals he allowed?
One of the goals that he allowed. And no, I haven't seen it, but
it was bad.
Okay. Like, so it's some
hit. Really bad, Drew. Like,
but also, there's other 2 other goals.
Bad.
I'm going to put up on YouTube right now. But was this last game against Red Bulls?
I think yeah. So.
But it was really bad.
It was so bad. It doesn't get much worse.
I typed in Chicago Red Bulls, and I think it thinks of talking about the basketball team.
There's a basketball team called the Chicago Red
Bulls? The Chicago Bulls.
Oh, it's like, what?
The Bulls are red.
That is true. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So I'm about to watch it after I get finished this advertisement. But I don't think this is a team effort thing. I mean, this is, you're allowing 2 goals a game is not a good recipe for winning. And do you happen to know which goal it was? Was this the first, second, or third?
The last one.
The last one. Okay. Here we go. But yeah, so while I find the video, Josh may be able to talk more into it, but I think the defense is just collapsing and maybe Slanina is part of that, but I think there's other issues at play here, but they're scoring goal, not goals, goal. That was pretty bad goalkeeping, by the way. I just saw it.
It's brutally bad. Yeah. So last time we talked about Chicago, we were like, hey, they have a good defense. They're not allowing any goals. And we're like, but their attack is terrible because they're not scoring any goals. So now they've completely flipped both of those, as Drew's mentioned. It's kind of hard to pinpoint like exactly what is wrong. Honestly, a big part of it is Slonina is in his first ever professional slump. Like that is part of it because he doesn't look extremely confident. This latest conceded goal is a big visualization of that. But even before that, he was flapping at a lot of crosses. I just watched him play Atlanta United when he let Ronaldo score a hat trick. And he wasn't bad per se, but there were definitely plays he probably would have made at the beginning of the year when he was way more confident than he is now. So that's a really big part of it. And, you know, you got to remember he's only 18. And I mean like 18 in a couple days, he like just turned 18. And we know that he's been dealing with picking Poland or the US. That's been resolved today. He picked the US. Hopefully that's, you know, done and he's feeling relieved and he can start to focus on his game because he's really got to pull himself out of this rut. So I do think that's a big part of it. It starts at the back, right? If the goalkeeper's not very confident, then your defenders aren't going to be as confident as normal. So I think that's really affecting them. But also kind of what you were saying, Connor, like Shaqiri is not up to speed yet. He has his moments. He did just have a goal and an assist, I think, on Wednesday night. And if not Wednesday night, it was on the weekend. So this past week was pretty good for Shaqiri. And he looked pretty decent in the game I saw him play against Atlanta. So I think he's got to find his footing. They just brought in Jairo Torres from Tijuana? From Solos? I can't remember. Oh, it's Atlas. From Atlas in Liga MX. So that's going to hopefully be like a good boost. Oh, they just got Chris Miller back from Hibs in Scotland, remember? And he made his debut in that Atlanta game, even though he just like joined the team like 2 days before. He just scored this past weekend against Red Bulls. Exactly. So I think those are all good signs. Like Drew was saying, they figured out how to score. That's really good. It's just going to be, you know, can Ezra Hendrickson really get these guys coached up? Can they fix some of these defensive issues? So I definitely want to give Chicago some more time. I don't think they'll end up finishing last. The East is just really bottled up right now. It's like really, everybody's really close to each other in the standings. So I think it will start to even out and get better for Chicago. But right now it's just, it's tough.
Exactly. And to that point, looking at the gap between Atlanta, who's in the last playoff spot, and Chicago, 4 points. It's a 4-point difference. That's it. Granted, Atlanta does have a game in hand. That's such a small, small gap in the grand scheme of things that anybody's still in it. I think Toronto FC is going to have a huge late season push once they get Insigne and some of their other summer signings, whether that be Domenico Crescito, if he comes. I'm blanking on the other guy's name, but he's a striker from Italy. It's the East, I think, is still wide open, and the second half of the season is going to be really entertaining, but Chicago have to step up. They got to start playing better. And I think that starts with Gab Selina playing well, and hopefully making that decision that he made today and announced today helps with that. But yeah, they can't keep allowing so many goals. It's killing them. And yeah, so that's Chicago. Let's talk about Seattle, and they finally did it. They won CCL. First MLS team in the history of the CCL being called the CCL. Of all teams to do it, I think Seattle being the ones kind of feels right. Right? Feels sort of like it how it should be, that a team that's been so dominant for so many years is the one who finally pushes the league over the hump.
Yeah, I think so. And I was like, there are not very many stadiums or cities that I think could have given that game the atmosphere it called for, but Lumen Field, not CenturyLink. Lumen Field was crazy. And I think they broke the attendance record. But yeah, atmosphere was crazy. I think Seattle fans knew how important that game was for the league and for them, because now there's not a trophy. Do they have an Open Cup? I don't know if they do.
I'm pretty sure they do. I think they have multiple Open Cups, actually.
Yeah, they probably have multiple of everything at this point. Yeah, so I mean, it just finished it off, and they got to do it at home. Absolutely demolished Pumas. Yeah.
It was at their detriment, though, too. João Paulo out for the season with an ACL tear, which happened, I think, in that game. So that's tough. But since then, they have won two of the last three MLS games. Can we call them the best team in MLS, in MLS history? Period.
Well, what do you mean by that? You mean the best team or the best franchise, best club?
Two different questions. Do you think they're the best franchise in MLS history? Do you think they're the best team in MLS history?
I do not think they're the best team in MLS history. I still think Toronto is the best team in history. Toronto 2017. The fact that they got the treble and also came so close to getting CCL in that following spring, I think they are the best. But obviously a monumental achievement for Seattle. But I think Seattle's the best club in MLS history. I think it's them, and I think it's the LA Galaxy right behind them, because the Galaxy have so many MLS Cup trophies and are still in some ways kind of the face of the league. But yeah, Seattle, best club ever. They've just, even this last week, since they won CCL, I'm impressed because they've already flipped a switch to start winning in the league again. The game that they lost after CCL was the one that was like a few days later when like none of those players played and they just threw out a bunch of teenagers against Dallas on the road. So that to me has been really impressive, going from CCL and flipping the switch. And not to take away from Seattle, but I've been impressed with Montreal and NYCFC as well, because they've done something similar. But I think it just proves how well built the Seattle team is. And also losing João Paulo, like, that sucks. I really like João Paulo. He's not overrated in the slightest, Connor, but they have the depth and the grit and the experience to be okay. And I think they're going to be fine. And Obed Vargas, who's like 18, I think, and from Alaska, like, he's the starter now. So it's just crazy. It's crazy.
I'm just going to say it. Brian Schmetzer is the best manager MLS has ever seen. The dude is unbelievable what he's been able to do with this team and the success that he's had year over year after over a year. I think he's the best manager this league has ever seen at this point in time. You know, obviously they've sent out Jesse Marsh to Europe and guys like that, but I think Schmetzer has had the most success in this league, period. It's so good. I so badly want him in on another team just to see if he could have the same success that he's had in Seattle. No?
I don't want to see him go anywhere else. I don't think he should.
I don't either.
And I don't think he'd be as successful anywhere else because he's a Seattle guy. He's so ingrained into the community. And especially, you know, ever since taking over midway through, I think it was 2017, right, for Siggy Schmid when he was let go. So he's just, it's like a perfect fit. And it's like a perfect fit from top to bottom. Garth Lagerwey at the, you know, in the front office, the kind of moves that he makes, it fits so well with Schmetzer and his personality and how he handles the team. And now they're starting to throw out academy kids. That means they're only going to get that much better. They haven't even, they don't have a reputation for selling players. That will probably change. And then you're talking about the most complete club. I mean, they are probably the most complete club right now, but that's like covering every single possible base.
Drew, what was your instant reaction to seeing Seattle finally do it?
I was happy. You know, it's frustrating. I think a lot of people were, you know, like, oh, I wish it was my club that did it, you know, with Atlanta making some, I don't even say like deep. Yeah, they made a run in CCL, I think. But, you know, if there's, again, we talked about Seattle kind of is this club that had to do it, that if anyone, it was going to be them. So I think that is very justified and very happy to see it finally happen once. Because for it to happen again and again, you have to have that first time to do it. And I think this one would have been so much more painful because there was so much buildup to it. And I think this one had like every possible piece going Seattle's way. They had that week off before. Pumas had a really important league game. They were at home, pretty much no advantages, no disadvantages about score line coming into it. I think it was 2-2. They got those two pins in like one. So everything was going Seattle's way. So if they were to blow it, that just would have made it all the more worse in another excruciating, painful CCL experience. But I was happy to see Seattle do it. I think those fans were ecstatic at Lumen Field. It was awesome to see them get that because I think even though they have had so much success in the league, there was still that grown, like that desire to be the first team to do it because no matter what, being the first team to win CCL is like almost this like trophy bigger than any other trophy because let's say Portland were to do it. Portland would always have that over Seattle. We know that rivalry. If LA were to do it or something like that. So this almost just feels like Seattle has everything kind of under control. They have all these MLS Cups, they have all these Open Cups, all these Shields, and now they finally have that to make it almost a complete trophy case. And they're one of those teams, man, like my dad, who doesn't really watch MLS. He just knows. He knows Seattle's good. Like, he saw the Seattle one. He's like, oh, they're still good? It's like, yes, Dad. Like, they've never not been good. I don't know what life is like when Seattle is not good at soccer. So to finally see the league do it is really cool. To see Seattle do it with that fan base, all that energy, to see them get to watch it in person at their stadium. It would have been cool to go down to Mexico and do it. But just everything about that match was perfect. So I was happy. I was texting my friends like, man, maybe one day Atlanta will do it. Maybe they'll do it one day. Will they actually do it? Who knows? But I mean, I think in the post game, Stephen Fry even said, like, you know, this isn't the last team to do it. It's just the first team to do it. And hopefully, I mean, that's the goal. Like, everyone starts showing the graphics of CCL winners. And it's a bunch of Mexican flags. And there's this one U.S. flag at the bottom. There should be a Canadian flag in there, but we won't open that box up. But has to happen at some point. So are they the best ever? I think I still say Toronto 2017 is the best ever team, best club. Yes. I think Seattle, if they were to win, I'm not sure their Open Cup status. If they were to win MLS Cup, I think you could make an argument that they're the best ever, but it would still rival Toronto 2017. And that's a big if they win MLS Cup, because doing that after the season is a lot of wear and tear on the legs. So they have a shot. It's going to be really hard.
This is coming from a Toronto FC fan. If they win MLS Cup this season, instantly the best team MLS ever, period. Because to do that after winning CCL and going deep in CCL is so unbelievably impressive. Toronto won MLS Cup and then went and got to the CCL final. 2018 after that was the year of hell for that team. Period. Everything went wrong. Everybody was injured. Everything fell apart, frankly. And if Seattle can manage to go from winning CCL, it's weird to say, winning CCL to winning MLS Cup, I don't think there's even a conversation that they're the best team in MLS. I think it's just a guarantee. Like, especially when they're doing that without one of their DP midfielders in Joao Paulo. This team is so impressive. I can't say enough good things about them. But yeah, like, it's just, it's so special to see them win CCL, and hopefully more MLS teams do it going forward.
Seattle is unfortunately out of Open Cup. Lost to San Jose at Pens. But that was also a week after, literally a week to the day after winning CCL. So it's CCL, Dallas, San Jose, and Open Cup. That went to penalty kicks.
Of the three, I think Open Cup probably is last on their priority scale, all things considered. But I guess you do have to include that. I don't know.
It's open. Toronto 2017 won their domestic trophy cup shenanigan.
When there were only like three teams in it, but yes.
That's what I'm saying. If they were to win Open Cup, that would be like, oh my God, impossible.
That would have been absurd, but yeah, whatever. Who cares? They won CCL. Hopefully they can push into the MLS season. Hopefully they don't win MLS Cup. Hopefully Toronto FC does. But, you know, let's do our players of the week, goals of the week, and our games to watch. We'll start with our players of the week. And because he's not paying attention, Josh will go first.
Nice one, Connor, because I'm not paying attention.
You know, you are
player of the week.
Leaning
your chair. I am paying attention to y'all. I'm paying attention to y'all. Talking about Seattle. I picked Jamiro Montero. You guys were talking. Look, all right, to wrap up, to show you that I was listening, I think that it would be impressive enough for Seattle to just get MLS Cup and CCL. I do agree with you guys. Any trophy in addition to CCL makes them best team. So I do agree with you guys. I would say it's a long shot, but technically Supporter Shield is still in play for them. So it is unfortunate. It would be crazy. They've looked really good in the two games that they tried really hard in since CCL. They did not look good in the game where they rolled out a starting 11 of teenagers, duh. Or in a game, the Open Cup game, where they lost to a rejuvenated San Jose Earthquakes in penalties, which is always kind of a coin flip anyway.
They lost 10-9, by the way. So that's like as exactly far as it can go. They played as exactly much soccer as physically possible in a week.
There you go. So, yeah, I think, honestly, Seattle's built so well and deep enough that maybe they will make a Supporters Shield run. But enough of the Seattle talk. Big kudos, big congrats. Thank you for paving the way, Seattle, for the rest of MLS. They invented CCL. My player of the week was Javier Montero, and we're doing our players and goals of the week mostly from Wednesday night, since that was considered a full match day by MLS. But yeah, I voted for Javier Montero with my first pick. And then my second one was Shaqiri, I think, because he had the goal and assist in Chicago's crazy 3-3 draw against Red Bulls. But Montero had his first ever MLS brace, and San Jose came away with the win against, who was it? Pulling it up right now, even though my computer's being slow. If I remember correctly, it was a fairly impressive victory. Okay, yeah, they beat Portland, who had just come off a 7-2 win over Sporting Kansas City. So yeah, pretty good win by San Jose. And yeah, Montero was my pick.
Drew, you're next.
Yeah.
No, I'm next. Then you. Oh. I have a transition to goals of the week. I will say my player of the week was Daniel Chollet. Scored a brace in his match for SKC this week. So yeah, Daniel Chollet.
There it is. He caught himself.
Yeah. Daniel Chollet. I was so focused on saying the S right that I forgot. Daniel Chollet scored the brace. Drew, who is your player of the week now?
Yeah, I'm trying to see where you're going to make this transition, but I'll leave it up to you. For the second time in a row, I went with the goalkeeper. Brad Stuver made 6 saves for Austin FC on their way to beating LAFC 2-1. So, and some of those were really good saves. He kept them in it. So, goalkeeper Union Unite. Last week, I think I picked Andre Blake. And by last week, I mean last episode, which was like 3 weeks ago.
Speaking of goalkeeper, goalkeeper assist on your goal of the week.
Ah, there it is. Bang. Yeah, Alex Mule's goal, Nashville SC. I don't remember the whole details of it. I know Joe Willis's third career MLS assist. Best mustache in the league.
Second Friday of the season, by the way.
Second of the season. Wow. Best mustache in MLS, just beating out Josh Bolin and Tommy Scoops. So we love a good stash on the pod. But yeah, Alex Mule got it. The banger, Giotis went nuts. So Alex Mule, the Manhattan Messi, as they like to call him. I don't know who they are, but I saw it on Twitter. So
don't forget, he used to play soccer with Timothy Chalamet. They played youth soccer together growing up. Always important.
Former Hoya. I know I wrote something about Alex Mule when I was in Nashville, so I know way too much about this guy.
All right, I'll go next. I went with Jackson Ewell's diving header. Even though the goalkeeper got a hand on it and made it look way more impressive. I don't know. Diving headers are just impressive. So yeah. Josh, you cheated. What's your goal of the week?
I only cheated a little bit. I picked a goal from Saturday night. So not technically this past match week, but it was only, 6 days ago. So I think it's allowed, but also it was a freaking sweet goal. It was Andrew Brody, left back for RSL. It ended up being the game winning goal against Austin, scored in like the 88th minute, I think, something really late, maybe even stoppage time, but holy crap, what a goal. Ball rolled all the way across the field, one time finish, just lasered that thing into the corner, and Stuver did not even have a chance against that. So just a really, really awesome goal from Brody. I jaw dropped when I saw it, just so good.
You're going to go again because we're going to keep with the Nashville theme with your game to watch.
Yeah, so I'm picking Nashville versus Atlanta United. Nashville is hosting on Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. two reasons. One, last time these two teams played up in Nashville was about a week and a half ago for US Open Cup. Very entertaining game, I'll say. I don't want to call it fun because Atlanta lost, but Atlanta and I went up 2-0 the first half. Nashville came back to win an extra time 3-2. So just a really back and forth game. These games typically end 2-2 or somewhere around there. So there's always lots of goals between Nashville and Atlanta for whatever reason. But the second reason why I'm picking this game to watch is because I am actually making the trip up to Nashville this weekend with my brother and a couple friends. We're going to go to Geodis Park. And I am so excited just watching their game on Wednesday night against Montreal. The place sounded really loud. And I know it's going to be completely different on a Saturday night against Atlanta with probably a more full stadium. So I'm really, really looking forward to the trip.
I'll go next because another podcast member might be going to this game too. Mr. Drew Hubbard might be going to Charlotte versus Vancouver. Vancouver, the only reason I picked this game is because Vancouver have zero healthy goalkeepers. Thomas Tuchel is out with a broken hand, and both of their other backup goalkeepers tested positive for COVID. So they have nobody. So I'm very interested to see how that will go for them, and therefore it is a game to watch. Drew, you'll finish us off before we do our favorite segment of the podcast, Josh's favorite segment of the podcast. What's your game to watch?
My game to watch is Austin Orlando. I think it is in Austin, but still tough matchup for Austin Orlando. Kind of has quietly being really good. No one's really talking about Orlando, I don't think. And Austin FC, obviously, that win kind of got a little attention bump. See how they can. This is a really tough stretch for them. Two RSL, two LAFC hosting Orlando. So if they can get 3 points out of this, that would be really impressive. Also, equally as impressive is if Orlando can go to Austin and get 3 points. Probably means it'll be like a 1-1 draw, but two good teams going at it. I don't know when it is. Maybe Saturday. Who knows?
Who cares? You'll watch if you're listening to this podcast because you're a diehard MLS fan.
I hope it's not on Saturday because the Charlotte Independents play Ford Madison. Jackson Mingos. That's my game to watch.
You and you only. Let's do our MLS fantasy update. Josh's favorite segment. He loves it so much he's muted himself. So we'll start with our top.
He really did. Oh my God.
He literally has. Our top five, rounding out at number one, and this is a little off because we're in a two-game week, so people can pick up points later on the weekend, but as it currently stands after the midweek games, we've got USMNTSC with Przybiórka, sitting at 1,066 points, Real AVC with Verdeja sitting in second, with 1063. Avenue BFC in Ketchum sitting at 1040 in third. Two twos in a row in fourth at 1039. So very close to Avenue BFC. And Moron FC with Snee or Snay. Still haven't gotten a proper pronunciation on that. Sitting on 1027. So good week for him so far. Rounding out our bottom, because fantasy soccer sucks, according to him, Mr. Josh Boland has 531 points, which is very, very far back. He's got less than half of the points that first place has, so he can hold that with pride, I guess. I don't know.
Impressively bad. Impressively bad.
Yeah. Drew, you're doing less bad. You're sitting at 682. Sitting in, or nope, you're higher than that. You're 725 in 12th. And then I'm rounding us out. I'm sitting in 10th, top 10, baby, sitting on 876 points. So it's still close up top and in the middle. And then Josh loves bringing up the rear, but thank you for listening. Subscribe to the podcast because we always forget to say that. Hopefully we'll be back sooner than last time, but I will let Drew do his usual goodbyes unless Josh has anything he wants to add to our fantasy discussion. He's still muted. Drew, take
Yes, thank you guys so much, as always, for listening. We really appreciate it. And as always, this is the website, MLSMultiplex.com, to check out awesome written content from our writers as the season continues. Follow the website on Twitter at MLSMultiplex. See stories get posted as they get written. And be sure to follow us on Twitter for takes throughout the games. Myself at _DrewHubbard, Josh at Josh_Boland, and Connor at CWGSomerville. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. I'm not going to leave that out this time, so you don't get to miss an episode when it comes out. So be sure to hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate it. And please leave a review on the podcast. We would love to hear ways of how we can get better and improve. And the only way to do that is by leaving a review. So please let us know how you're liking the podcast, we can do to improve. We really appreciate that as well. Subscribe, review, all that good stuff. And be sure to subscribe. I'm going to say it again, so you don't miss next time's episode. So thanks again, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the MLS Multiplex podcast. Check out all of the contributors' written work at MLSMultiplex.com.